Blog Talk Radio.
Merry, merry,
merry, merry,
Neos, baby, love, say I
just wanna tell the truth, man.
Yeah.
I just wanna tell the truth, my baby,
say I.
Great morning, great morning, great morning. Welcome. I see we got some callers on the line. And if you could just keep your phone on mute for a few minutes, I'm going to open up the lines in, for questions. So for Ms. Charlton, so if you could just keep your phone on mute and I'll open up the lines for you in a few minutes. So, you know, we got a good turnout this morning. I just want to start with some announcements. I want to start with some announcements first. If anybody's looking for advertising, promotions, commercials, radio interviews or radio spins, either for your business or maybe for your entertainment events. I'm looking for some authors and life coaches. So if you're looking, you know, to do any advertisements, my email is faithfocusfinish@gmail.com. It will be on this episode that you can actually download and listen to it again if you missed the live version of it. Some of the guests that I just recently had on that you can also go back and look at their episodes is Mr. Keisha Wade. She had she came out with a new single called Love Languages. You can find her under Queen of Hearts. We had Derek Pickett, who just released a new book titled The Power of Belief. So that was a good interview I had with him. He's a serial entrepreneur. And also, oh, sorry, I had to put you guys on mute for a minute. He's a serial entrepreneur where he also do credit repairs. So, guys, he had a powerful meeting. Also, I have Ms. Kyra Banks that's going to be coming up. Her book is called Mind Traveling. It's about her journey through foster care and abuse and finding her father and, you know, trying to get out of the foster care system. So I'm excited to get ready to have her on the show. I have Mr. Antonio Brooks. Now, I had him two times on the show. We had to do a part one and a part two. And the name of his book is called Child Support, How I Paid It and Made It. That was a very powerful story. He was stepping up and paying the child support without going to court, but he ended up in court. And basically, the judge told him that that was a gift that he gave for the last 5 years, paying that child support. So he was $25,000 in arrears. So he paid that and he made it. So we did a part one and a part two. Also, he have a nonprofit organization to help people out that have cancer, help them pay their bills. Soon, me and him going to be doing a donation to help him out with his organization. I had Ms. Tawanda Steele. She came on and talked about having breast cancer, how she survived that. And that's one of my real good friends. So I appreciate Ms. Tawanda, because when I was down and out and had a car accident, she actually came and helped me out. She was traveling back and forth to Buffalo from Baltimore to help me back out. So I, you know, in that process, I had to learn how to walk, talk, and eat all over again. So I appreciate you, sis. I had Dr. Chantrice Holloman, the author of Shoes Without Feet. That's the name of her book, Shoes Without Feet. She talked about her journey of having a heart attack, ended up, you know, contracting a infection, and they had to amputate both of her legs. So she has a very powerful story. So, guys, that's some of the people that I recently had on the show. If you can, I'm going to make sure I post this on the episode so you guys can go and get a copy of their book. And I have Ms. Charlton, on the line today. We're going to be talking about her up-and-coming stage play in her book, The Death of Lie. And I'm super excited to have her on the line, Ms. Charlton. Wait a minute, hold on. I got to take you off. Ms. Charlton, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Faith.
Hi. Welcome. I appreciate you. How's your day so far?
It's fantastic. Like, just amazing. I'm just excited to be here and share with you today.
Oh, thank you. Just a little bit about Ms. If you want to share a little bit about some of your organizations before we get started?
Absolutely. I am Felicia Charlton, and I am a coach, author, consultant, and recently a playwright and founder of the Death of a Lie Empowerment Program. The Death of a Lie was a concept that was a book that turned into an empowerment program that's now a play, and it's based on telling your truth, owning your truth, acknowledging your truth, and releasing lies that keep you bound. And so The Death of a Lie deals with the premise of looking in your mirror and discovering what lies have to die so that you can live, with the understanding that there's a lot of bad things that happen to good people, but at some point we have to acknowledge our truth and walk in faith so we can begin to heal.
All right. Very powerful. I'm glad I, you know, had the chance to get you on, you know, have you on my show. Just a little bit more about Ms. Charleston. She's a wife, a mother, educator, leader, author, life coach, and a survivor from 7 foster care placements. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Also, she became the first principal of a dropout recovery alternative school to be named National Urban School of Excellence before age 40. So very powerful, very powerful. So let's get let's get just talk a little bit about the beginning when you talked about being placed in foster care. At which age were you placed in foster care?
I believe my foster care journey started as a baby. We were placed in foster care probably around when I was around 3, and my mom regained custody of us, and then she lost custody again when I was about 5 or 6 years old.
Okay. How many siblings do you have?
I have 2 siblings. One is unfortunately deceased, and she passed last year, and then I have a brother who I have not seen since he was 3 years old and I was 6 years old.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear about your sister.
Thank you.
How long were you in foster care?
We were with the system up until I was in about sixth grade, but we never got back with my mother. So I lived with my grandmother and then ended up with my great aunt. But in between there, we had placements between both of those homes. We were actually in a group home. Then we were with the foster care family. And then my grandmother ended up suing the state of Detroit for custody of us because she didn't get notified that we were placed in the system in Detroit because she was in Ohio. And then once she got us back, unfortunately, she died of cancer. And then her sister, who was my great aunt, ended up finally raising us, myself and my
sister. Okay, wow. That's crazy. They kind of got weird laws like that in Georgia, which a lot of people don't, when I bring up some of the laws about when a parent passed away and the family getting custody, is pretty crazy. So you definitely got to know the laws and making sure you have wills and things in place when events like that happen. So, it's so many people out here really not educated about that. So what I know that you decided to be a principal at one time. Are you, you're not a principal anymore, are you?
I just retired 2 years ago, but my license is still current, but I just retired from being a principal just 2 years ago.
You look too young to be retired. So
I was in education for 18 years, and I was a principal for 10 years, and I've always said I wanted to retire because I believe that it's important that you educate kids, giving them the best that you have, and if you're no longer willing to do that or able to do that, then I don't believe you should be an educator. I still have a lot to give, but it was very difficult to see people who use the system to benefit them instead of taking responsibility for educating the children that they were being paid to educate. And I never wanted to be that person who was counting down the days to retire. And so I had so many other aspirations. I love the work, but I took the opportunity to say in 10 years, I'm going to retire, and I retired myself.
Hey, that's the best way to do it. You know, give yourself a goal and make that, you know, make sure that you stick to the date and your goals, because there's a lot of people out here sleeping on their goals and in their dreams. So there's I'm sorry?
I said some of them end up being bitter educators because they have a hard time believing in the kids because they don't believe in themselves or their goals and dreams.
Right. Now, what made you want to be a principal? Because, you know, some people usually start off with being a teacher, but what made you want to be a principal?
I didn't want to be a principal at first. I was an educator. I was a user support technician, actually. I came home from college, and I couldn't find a job. My major is public relations, and I was pregnant with my daughter, who's now 19, and somebody told me the school system was hiring, and they needed support technicians to run their computer systems, and so I said I could do it. I had no idea what I was doing, but when I took the job, in 2000, it was very difficult for me to find a public relations job in Ohio. And so while I was there, I started to really enjoy the kids. And I started wanting to come outside of that user support, putting computers, plugging computers in role. And I was starting to look for opportunities. And I'm like, oh, in order to come outside of the user support technician role, you have to go to school to become a teacher. And so I just started to inquire about that, work more in the community, then became a business teacher for a small community college, and ended up taking that knowledge to be a principal, a business teacher at the Dropout Recovery School. And I always like to be in charge because I believe that things should be done in excellence. And so I told the principal that, you know, if you ever leave, I think I could see myself in an administrative role. And lo and behold, he left within 6 months.
Wow.
And asked me if I wanted to be the principal, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And so that's how it happened.
Wow. Well, I know you probably ran into a lot of troubled kids, you know, and the crazy thing is I have some friends that's been in the foster care and things like that, and they, you know, ended up doing some great things in the community. So I know that you probably ran into a lot of children that were in foster care that was troubled. And that kind of makes people have a little bit more compassion for them when you have the troubled kids and they're in foster care. But did you run into a lot of children? Did you run into a lot of children like that?
I did, especially being at a dropout recovery school. I ran into all sorts of children with home situations that were not either favorable or they were in some sort of a transition. And so I did run into some, even though all my students were not like that, I ran into some students like that, yes. And I was very compassionate, but also one of the things that people do sometimes is we enable people because we have so much sympathy that we don't expect anything. And one of the things with my students was, I understood your circumstances, but we're not going to operate in excuses. We need to take action. And so, right. Yes, this is the problem. Yes, this is the issue. But what do we need to do from this point forward is how I ran my building. And so my goal was to get them to be a part of the community and see how they could serve and help others so they could find value in themselves and understand that they were more than just a foster care kid, just a student in an alternative school, and just a product of their circumstances. Like, you're a real person. You have something to contribute, and my goal is to help you find that so you can move forward out of this situation.
Right. So it was an alternative school that you were a principal at?
Yes, I was a principal for 7 years at an alternative school, and then I was 3 years in public school.
Well, you know what I like about your story? You know, I see that you had mentioned that did you go to alternative school also?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Because it's a lot of kids out here that really need it. It's some innocent people that's in alternative school. I went to an alternative school myself. And
okay.
I really was an innocent person, but you know, sometimes you get convicted of things before you even get a chance to speak your word, but it is what it is. But
yes.
I think that it's so many smart, intelligent people that's an alternative school. One of my mentors, she actually is on my page, on my Facebook page, is Paula Solomon. She was one of my mentors when I went to alternative school. And I tell you, she really helped build my confidence up because I think I probably be have low self-esteem. And so I just want to thank Ms. Paula for being there. And Ms., she don't even understand how her being here and talking to me really helped me a lot. So she was one of my mentors when I was in high school. Yes, ma'am. And I went off to college and did everything they told me to do. I didn't get rich yet, but I'm on my way. But I mean, I did go, you know, follow through and do some of the things that people I promised that I was going to do. So that was pretty cool. Now, this book, you wrote your own book. It's called The Death of a Lie. You know, going into making it, you know, you wrote it out or whatever and made it to be a stage play. What inspired you to write the book and then decide to do the stage play?
Well, I wrote the book because I just felt like I didn't look like what I went through, and I knew that I was blessed, and I knew that my path was a little different than people who had similar circumstances, even within my own family. And I just thought that there was more to me than just the outside shiny piece, and I wanted to share with everyone that I had a story and a testimony to tell. And that's what really pushed me to write the book, because with my students, no, I did not go to an alternative school or a dropout recovery school, but we had a lot of similar things. And so the book helped me express poetry, which I absolutely love. I'm a poet, spoken word artist at heart. And it absolutely allowed me to express myself and share some of the things that I went through, dealing with abandonment, dealing with learning how to love myself, and then dealing with being unapologetic for being strong for who I currently am.
Right. Well, you know, it's a lot of people don't look like they've been through what they went through. I mean, Boy, I tell you, that's so funny because when I was on this other radio station, I said to them, it might take me a whole week or two to even tell my story. So I commend people that actually sit down and write their book because I need to definitely write me one and tell my story. So I appreciate you, you know, being open and wanting to share that information with people so, you know, so they can know your story. How did you come up with that the name of that the book and the play?
Well, the name of the book came from I used to say to myself, my perception of me was a false reality, and that perception had to die. So I just that was my thing for myself was I was telling myself lies about myself that allowed me to act a certain way that was not my best. And so I thought about that. If those are lies, and they can no longer exist in the new person that I am or that I was becoming. And so immediately I thought about the death of a lie. And so that's where the name came from. And then with the stage play, since it's poetry, spoken word, I love music, I love dance and theater, I had the opportunity to apply for a grant, the Montgomery County Artist Opportunity Grant, to take that concept and turn it into a play. And so I felt like if it's poetry, then I can definitely tell this story more vividly and take it off the page so people can actually feel it and see it. And it's not just a play of poems. There's dialect, there's stepping, there's dancing, there's youth in there, ages 10, all the way up to my age, to 40. So it's 17 cast members in the play.
Wow. I was going to ask you if it was a you know, if they have a lot of poetry and things in it. Wow. Mm-hmm. So some of the poetry that you use in your book is and the way you tell your story, is that your true story or are those stories from multiple different people that you encounter?
They're mine. Everything is mine. It was all because I used poetry since I was a little girl and introduced to Maya Angelou. I was introduced to For Color Girls way before it was popular. I had the record because I used to go to the library and read because that was my escape from dealing with a lot of the things that I was dealing with in my childhood. I was also, even though I lived with my great aunt, unfortunately I was abused mentally and physically. And so poetry, spoken word, became my outlet in order to tell, to heal and to focus on something different. And so every story, every poem in the book is written by me and it's about my life and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, about being in foster care, because I know a lot of people are abused in it. And for the life of me, I don't understand why people go and get these children or ask for them when they abuse them. And so, that was going to be my next question, if you ever were abused in it. Did you ever have any homes that was a good home that you were comfortable with when you were in foster care?
I did have some good homes. A lot of it, I really don't remember a lot until sixth grade, but, yes, I did have good homes that I was in Detroit when I was with a family there. They were amazing, and I was not abused in that home. They were an older couple, but that was the couple that I got taken away from because my family didn't know. The family didn't know that I was here. And my grandmother, she was not abusive. I mean, she broke out the switch, and I don't think a switch is abusive. But unfortunately, her sister was mentally ill, and her sister was bipolar. And she was born in 1928, and she was born in the foster care system in a group home. And so when she raised us, she raised us the way that she was raised, which was she was abused. And so, I mean, horribly abused. And she didn't know that she was bipolar. So it wasn't a thing of, like, she didn't know that, that getting kids would trigger her to act the way that she was raised. And so she was horribly abusive, and unfortunately, you know, it led to a lot of issues in between myself and between my sister, and it led to my sister, you know, just having some really low self-esteem and going through some things, a lot of things which led to her untimely passing.
Wow. Yeah, it could be a struggle because it definitely messes with your mental, and when you in abusive situations like that. And I've seen some people go through depression and suicidal and all kind of things like that, being in the foster care. But I also met a lot of beautiful people with good hearts that's in, that was in foster care also. So, well, I'm really sorry to hear about your sister because, you know, imagine if you guys could have built something together. So,
mm-hmm. So my goal is to tell my story so that her legacy can live on, her legacy.
Yeah. Wow. How old was she when she passed away?
41.
Okay. Wow. So I know you, in the book, you know, the play was, like you said, it was a diary which exposes women to their lies and telling themselves in a search of happiness. Do you have anything that, one of the things that you want to share, a personal story of yours, that you want to share, that it would, because I don't want to give them too much information because I want people to go out and buy your book and get to the play. I'm really thinking about trying to get in my car and come to the play anyway, but do you have any one particular story that you want to share that you have went through that kind of let you know that I have to, you know, I definitely have to tell this story to other people? Do you have any of those kind of stories for us?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's a lot of that in there. And I think one of the greatest responses I get for people who read the book is they see themselves in it, and that makes me so excited. So a story in particular would be, I would just talk, I have a poem called Happy Father's Day. When my mother was 4 months pregnant with me, she found out my father had died by seeing his car being pulled out of the lake on TV. Mm. Yeah, so I never met my father. My father passed away in 1976. I was born in 1977. And so I always in my heart felt like if I met him, he would have been there. I have no idea if that's true, but as a child, I needed to believe that. And so I share a poem called Happy Father's Day about my father and the type of man that I thought that he would have been and the type of father that I wanted him to be to me. And so I look at that as I needed something to hold on to believe that this person loved me and would have protected me and would have been there for me and would have made sure that I was okay. And so one of the poems in there talks about, God, can you please tell my father Happy Father's Day? And so that's a part of the book, and that is also in the play as well.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's pretty powerful. I'm gonna open up the lines for a few minutes because I see we have some more callers on the line, and if any callers have any questions, you're more than welcome to, you know, ask any questions. And if anyone that's listening in, our call-in number is 563-999-3741. That's 563-999-3741. And I'm opening up the lines for any callers. Do any callers have any questions you want to ask Ms. Charlton? All right. Sometimes we get some shy people on the line. But if you have any questions, you're more than welcome to ask, you know, to just, you know, chime in and ask her any questions. I'm going to take a quick break right quick, and we'll be right back, okay?
All right. Thank you. All right, God has not forgot.
If he said that he would do it, it will come to pass. God has not forgot. God has not forgot. Can you help us say,
situation. Don't get discouraged.
Don't get discouraged.
Welcome back to Faith Focus Finished Blog Talk Show. We are normally on Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to noon. The guest call-in number is 563-999-3741. And we're on talking to Ms. Charleston, about her play and book, The Death of a Lie. And this stage play basically is an emotional, heart-pounding, soul-stirring, I can't even get the word out today. I'm tongue-tied. Performance of works of her book. The Death of a Lie is a book of poetic, is a poetic diary which exposes the lies women tell themselves in search of happiness. So I appreciate you getting on and telling people about part of your, you know, your journey and your story and how you got to the point that, you know, that you decided to make it a play so people could start seeing it and how it works, how it's been working for you, basically.
Yeah.
So, so tell me, where's the play going to be performed?
The play is going to be at a beautiful museum called the Dayton Art Institute. They just renovated their theater. It's a 600-seat theater that is in the set in the middle of a museum, and so that's where it's going to be, is at the Dayton Art Institute in Dayton, Ohio.
Wow, cool. That sounds very interesting. I like museums. I like botanical garden things. I like a lot of artwork, so it sounds like it's going to be a nice place to have your event. So,
yeah, I'm excited about it.
So what is your target audience?
My target audience are families, just families with ages, with youth ages 13 and up. So my target audience is 13 and up, also women and fathers and families. My goal is to let the community hear this story so that it can create a dialogue and a conversation in homes about how we think about ourselves, how we view ourselves, physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. And some of the things that kids might be going through that they don't know how to say or articulate. So that's the purpose of it, and that's what it's about. And so that's the audience that I'm looking for. I highly recommend 13 and Up because in the play I do talk about pregnancy and some of its unintended consequences. And so I really want that audience to either be with a parent or a guardian or be 13 and Up if you're not with a parent or guardian.
Okay. Now, how much is your book and then how much is the play? Because first of all, let me back up. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Because I know sometimes when people do a play, it's a little different than what the book is. So that's why I'm asking how much is the book and then how much is the tickets to get into the play?
Absolutely. And they are, of course, two different costs. I mean, like I said, we're at an amazing venue, the Dayton Art Institute, and money is going to provide 100 youth in foster care with tickets. So the adult tickets to the play are $40. And the youth tickets to the play are $15. And so part of that, the reason that we had it at the Dayton Art Institute is because it's important for us to see, like you said, beautiful things. It's important for people who might not have the opportunity to go to a place like that, to come into that, because exposure changes your life. And I know the theater and being exposed to beautiful places has changed my life. And so for those youth who we're giving 100 tickets away to in foster care, we want them to come into this art institute, which for some of them will be the first time, and we want them to have a whole experience and then see people who look like them there so they can start to imagine a different type of future around activities and events in beautiful places.
I thought that was so wonderful when I read that you were going to give 100 tickets away to some foster kids, and I thought that was so wonderful, and that was pretty creative. And that's right. They need to be exposed to something different, because I remember the first time I was exposed to a play, and ever since then I said, I want to go to every play possible.
Yes,
ma'am.
I'm sorry, you asked me about the cost of the book.
Yes,
the
ma'am.
Book is $14.99 plus tax, so and shipping. So if you get the book online, it's a total of $21. So the book is $21, and that includes the tax and the shipping and handling. And I'll put the link in the comments for the book as well.
Okay. Now, do you autograph any of the books, or they just can just order it offline?
I am available. I sell my own books because I self-publish my book, and so but my books are also available on Amazon. But I prefer if you buy them from me, they can be autographed. Absolutely, yes. And in addition to those that we're giving 100 tickets to, they're also getting books as well. Books are included in their tickets.
Oh wow, that's pretty awesome. Wow, that's pretty cool. Now, in a few minutes, I want to definitely let you give the information on how people could get in contact with you. Now, are you looking for any sponsors or anything like that for your plays or anything?
Of course, yes. I'm looking for sponsorship. Right now, we are only doing one run in Dayton, Ohio, but we aspire to go to Montgomery, Alabama. I went to Alabama State University, so of course I want to take the play back home. And they have an amazing department, so that's one of my major goals. And then we also want to do the play in Atlanta, and with the goal of also going to New York. So I'm always looking for sponsorship to help support and bring this mission to as many people as possible. Yes, and I do want to take some time to thank my current sponsors as well. I have people that have sponsored as well. Twist Cupcakes, thank you so much for sponsoring. Thank you so much, William Tweed, who sponsored. Thank you, Tommy Morgan, who has sponsored. And thank you to all of the many sponsors, Deidre Bartlett, who sponsored, Marilyn Capernetti, who sponsored. So thank you to everyone so far, because as we know, we have dreams, but dreams cost. And so I just want to thank you guys for helping us continue to build this and do this in excellence.
Yes, ma'am. What other ways can people get in contact with you? Are there any? Well, I did put some links in the episode, but what other ways could people get in contact with you? And also, if you could put that in your links.
I can. I will. I will put my website there. I have all the information on my website. And it's charlton.com. people can also, if they want to find out more information about how to become a sponsor or how to bring the Death of a Life Stage play to your area, I can be reached at 937-995-0900 or charltoncharlton.com.
Excellent.
And I'm also on social media as The Death of a Lie. Anywhere you see The Death of a Lie, which trademark is pending, but anywhere you see Death of a Lie, that's me.
All right. Now, I know you have some other organizations and things that you're doing. What other things are you doing, programs and things that you have going on right now?
Well, I am currently a member of the Best Sorority ever known, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. So shout out to the sorority. I had to give a little love today. But yes, I'm a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, and so we practice service initiatives all across the country and all across the world. And so I'm active in my chapter here at home. So shout out to Beta Eta Omega chapter, and shout out to Beta Pi chapter of Alabama State University. And so I work with the Alpha Pals currently to help do some mentoring and empowerment. I also am a member of the Building the Black Dollar and Economic Legacy Campaign and Committee for Alpha Kappa Alpha. I also do just regular community volunteer work. So if I find a project or something that I'm interested in outside of the wonderful work that AKA is doing, then I do mentorship too.
Okay. And then you have an empowerment program?
I do. I'm a coach, and so I have clients, and shout out to all of my amazing clients who are out there listening for my Death of a Lie Empowerment Program. And so I coach executives, leaders, and business owners to deal with issues that affect them personally and professionally. And so I have an empowerment program, and one of my staple programs is the 48 Jumpstart Program. And so I really, truly enjoy working with my clients, and we talk about leadership issues, we talk about career transitions, we talk about the imposter syndrome, feeling like you're worthy and you belong on your job, and we also talk about how to manage your personal and professional life and making sure that you don't get lost in your career. And so that's what I coach my clients to deal with, and I also consult in school districts as well.
Okay. That sounds like some things I probably need to sign up for. I mean, it's always good to have to want to build and be more positive and, you know, and building your own business and things like that. So, I mean, I'm always open to learn some new things. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
How long did you have that program?
Well, I just launched the program officially this year. But I've been consulting in school districts since 2013, so that's just a part of the services that I offer. So as a coach, I do my Death of a Lie empowerment coaching. I do group coaching for my clients, my executive and clients and leaders. As a consultant, I work with colleges, universities, and school districts. I do some curriculum work, but my passion is the resilience curriculum, helping teachers and administration connect their students' resilience to the culture and climate. So teaching them basically how to be positive at school and how that promotes academics and how focusing, learning how to manage your classroom, learning how to deal with kids who have high stress. I don't care if you're a dropout recovery or not, kids are stressed. And so as a teacher, if you know how to do that in addition to teach, then you're going to have a better atmosphere. So I go and coach on that as well. And I also help teachers and leaders become more impactful teachers and leaders in their building so that they can create a better culture and then also raise their test scores. So that's the business that I do with my consulting.
Wow. All right. This lady got plenty of hats. I admire you for that. There's nothing like a black powerful woman with entrepreneur spirits and just want to do some big things in the community. So that's pretty cool. Yes, ma'am.
I love it. I love my community. Absolutely.
That's excellent. That's good. Some good stuff. So I'm going to open up the lines right quick again and see if anyone had, we got some more new callers on the line. And again,
okay,
if anybody, you know, you can always call in. We have about maybe 10 more minutes on the line. So So if you want to call in, the number is 563-999-3741. So I'm going to open up the line right quick and see if anybody have any questions. Just a minute. I'm just opening them up now.
Okay.
All right, callers, everybody's open. If you have any questions, you're more than welcome to ask any questions. All right, we get some shy people on here. I'm telling you, this line is full. It's funny because as soon as I get offline, people usually call me or they start texting me and they start asking me questions. I'm like, why you ain't get on the show and ask? So I'm sure that I'm going to have some people that's going to ask me some questions. I'm just going to have to send them to you later.
I'll be happy to answer the questions. I understand that some people get a little stage fright when it comes to speaking out, so that's okay.
Yes, ma'am. So I want to ask you if you could say anything to the world, because this is a global platform. It's not a local platform. It's a global. If you could say anything to the world, any advice to any women, anybody in foster care, what would you say to those people?
I would say that making a mistake does not make you a mistake. In life, you're going to have a lot of challenges, and you're not going to get everything right. But if you live your life only focused on the things you got wrong, you'll miss out on all the beautiful things that are yet to come. And so give yourself grace. And step up and be able to open your mind to love yourself so that you can experience everything that God has for you. You are not a product of your mistakes. You are a product of who God envisioned you to be. And the possibilities are endless when you learn how to forgive yourself and forgive others.
Wow. That's say a lot right there. It really do. We have another caller on the line. The caller, would you like to say anything or ask any questions? From 937.
Yes, this is Angela Davis, and what I want to say to Felicia, congratulations on your dream becoming a reality. And I just also want to say thank you for having the courage to do this and to give the young ladies that are participating this platform to express themselves. And I do have a question. You are putting yourself out there. You're telling your story. And what do you say to those folks who are afraid to tell their story? And is there any fear in you telling your story? Because when you tell your story and you talk about those people that may have hurt you, you kind of are exposing, you know, I would say the family business. And so you kind of sometimes get backlash from other people saying, well, why are you telling the business? Even though it's your story, there are others that are, I guess you could say, exposed. What do you say to those people who want to tell their stories but are, I guess, are afraid because of the backlash that the family might say, well, why are you telling the family business?
That's a very good question. And it is that can be a struggle, but I felt like not telling the truth and not telling my story was killing me because it is the truth. It's my truth. And so do I have to shame people in telling my story? No, I do not have to shame you. But if these events are factual and they actually happen, and there's a healing and a testimony that can happen, then I felt like I am obligated to tell the truth and to tell the story without trying to bring hurt and pain to someone else, but actually the opposite, bringing openness and healing, because I believe that secrets kill. And everything has to be in time. You know, you have to make sure that it's your time and it's right and that your intent is good. But my intent is to, number one, make sure that I can be fully present mentally in my life for the things that God has for me, and then also that I can have the opportunity to allow someone else the same freedom by being honest with yourself, by facing your truth, then you can have healing. I know there's a lot of anger in keeping things bottled up, and there's a lot of low self-esteem, and there's a lot of generational curses in being quiet. And so at some point, it's going to come out one way or the other. And so I just decided that it was time to be free and also to give my kids an opportunity to know who I really am, not just what they see, but the things that I've gone through, and to show them that you can go through a lot of different things, you can deal with negativity, but you still have love and life to live and to give.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So when you told your story to your kids, what did they think or how did they feel? What are some of the questions that they asked you?
They haven't asked a whole lot of questions. I really live my life as transparent as I can because I don't want them to repeat mistakes that I made. And so along the way, I've always been open. I've always been like, hey, let me talk to you. Let me tell you something. This is what happened to me. This is what I did. So let's talk about it. Has it led to some tough conversations? Yes. But my thing was I didn't have anybody to talk to, and so I was making up all kinds of stuff in terms of what were good decisions, what were bad decisions, and I never wanted my kids to look at me and just pretend to be something versus feeling like I can really talk to my mom and get an honest answer. So I wanted to give them something that I never had, and so they've been very open and very kind and extremely supportive of this journey.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy because you can sometimes you share with kids and they, well, I know it's funny because I'm thinking about my niece. She actually came to my mind and I told her one day, you know, as you tell your kids things and they say, oh, they act like they don't believe you or whatever. And I said to her one day, I said, one day you're going to find yourself saying something you didn't think I was going to say. And it was the day that day came, I think she was about 25 or 26. And just hearing her voice on the phone, I already knew what the conversation was going to be. And she said, guess what, auntie? I said, what? I said, did you find yourself saying something you don't think you was going to say that you thought you was going to say? And she started cracking up laughing like, how did you know? Because I know you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is good to, you know, share them experiences with your kids so they can know, you know, really you're just showing them that you're trying to protect them versus just giving them you know, you're just really protecting them in the event those, you know, things happen. So sharing with your family is very important so that they
yes.
won't stumble on the same things that you've done.
Absolutely.
So, yes, ma'am. And by the way, I want to thank the caller that did speak up and call in. Sorry about that. I meant to thank you.
Thank you.
So we have another caller on the line. Some more callers just popped in. Let's see if they have any questions. Just a minute. I'm going to log them in. We have another caller that just called in from area 937. Do you have any questions?
Yes, it's me again. I just have another question.
Felicia,
as you're putting on this production, have you had any surprises? I believe you mentioned that this was your first, I mean, you've been a writer, you've been a poet, you've done some amazing things in the community, but this is your first venture in putting on a production of this magnitude. Has anything about the process surprised you that you weren't expecting?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that surprised me is to have a cast of 17 people. I think that shocked me. I'm still in awe. Almost emotional about the fact that these people have taken this vision, something that God gave me, and that they portray it in ways that I saw it. And I'm just amazed by that. I'm also in awe of somebody actually getting it, because when you write something, it's close and personal to you. But when you see somebody else who gets what you meant, like, that is so amazing to me. And so the cast members have done a phenomenal job, and every day it gets better and better and stronger and stronger. And so that has shocked me. And I think another thing that shocked me is the people that have been willing to give and to donate. I think that has shocked me as well, because I used to not like to ask, and that just came from the fear that somebody would want something in return or use it to hurt you. And so now, you know, I've been freed of that. So if I need something, I've been able to ask. And I've been amazed that some of the sponsors and volunteers and donors and people who just said, let me help you. And I'm like, y'all want to help me with something that God put in my head because you see it? I think that has been the most humbling, miraculous part of this, is to finally, for somebody who used to feel abandoned and awkward and weird, to finally say, God, they get it. We are connected. This message is not just for me. It's for everybody else, too, and it's for the world. And he's bringing me closer to people who know him and that are willing to hear it. So I think I'm just – that's the part that has gotten me. It's just the fact that y'all get it.
Wow.
Did I answer your question?
Yes,
you
ma'am.
Actually answered my question. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Wow. So, so if you can give me the date of your play and the address again.
Okay, the play is Saturday, November 16th at the Dayton Art Institute here in Dayton, Ohio, and it's at 2 p.m. It's at 456 Belmont Park. That's the Dayton Art Institute Museum at 456 Belmont Park here in Dayton, Ohio. If you have questions about group sales, you can reach me at 937-995-0900. And if you have some youth in foster care or a group home and we haven't already serviced you and you're still interested, we have a few tickets left because once those run out, we are going to have to close that out. But if you have people that could benefit, youth that are 13 and up with an adult that could benefit from this, please give me a call so we can continue to share and spread this message of hope and joy and love.
All right. So is it just that one day that you're going to be having it?
This is the premiere, yes. For so far,
okay.
It's just one day. We're going to premiere it because with the grant, I needed to premiere it this year before the end of the year. And so we're going to premiere it this year, and then we're going to regroup. And our goal is to take it wherever God leads us. I want to go to, like I told you, Atlanta. We want to take it off Broadway. We want to take it to Montgomery, Alabama. So we want to take it all across the country. But right now we're just premiering it here and debuting it in Dayton, Ohio, November 16th at 2 p.m.
All right. There it is, guys. Well, you can find her links attached to this episode. You can also go back and listen to the episode. And just make sure, if you can follow on the Blog Talk Radio. And my radio station name is Faith Focus Finish. So you can find her there. We'll also put the links in her comments. And that's going to take you directly to her episode. And I appreciate you getting on my Blog Talk Radio today.
Thank you, Faith, for having me. I've enjoyed myself. I had a blast. This was awesome.
Thank you. You're welcome. So, guys, I'm going to end out with this quote because we have two more minutes left. Keep your dreams alive. Understand to achieve anything requires faith and belief in yourself. Vision, hard work, working, being determined. Remember, all things are possible for those who believe. And on that note, you guys have a great and blessed day. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. And thank you again, Ms. Charleston. Have a great day.
Thank you, Faith. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.